Well, listeners, you're in for a treat. I'm with Alan, who's the vicar of St Andrew's Church in Hartford. How long have you been there now, Alan?
I think about 15 years, I see. But also a little village church just outside called Hartingford Bury.
Oh, yes. Yes,
Yeah.
that's a lovely spot as well. Yeah.
Mustn't forget.
And you
Mustn't
do a lot
forget.
of outreach work, of course, but we'll come to that. You do work in Sill Farm and all over. I had a little brief chat with Alan Stewart. I didn't introduce you properly. It's Alan Stewart, of course, not just Alan. But why I said Alan was I feel I've made a friend already. He seems such a wonderful man, one of the loveliest people I've met in a long time. So Alan grew up in Northern Ireland, and his mum ran a fish and chip shop. And
Fine.
Alan was a very creative young man, and he used to do drawings on the fish and chip paper. And he very, very creative, loved arts, and still do, don't you? You still love,
Yeah, still double.
still dabble, and collects pots. You collect.
Yeah,
He's
West
worried
German
about that. He's worried
pottery.
about being addicted to collecting pots, dear listener. So he's very human.
Yeah.
But I was wondering how growing up in Northern Ireland has influenced you. How has it moulded you? Because did you grow up during the conflicts and people seemed to
Yeah.
take sides? And it for me, it was. I always felt I wish there was a middle way, and I got upset seeing Ian Paisley on the television every night. But how has it influenced you in your life?
Yeah, well, I was born 67, so just before the troubles really began. So I didn't know anything else really. Suppose when you're within a situation, within a culture like that, you accept it really. From an early age, you were taught which tribe you belong to, really. And so I sort of belonged to the Protestant tribe. And then there was the Catholics, and never do they meet. You know, our education was separate. Primary school, secondary school, I barely met a Roman Catholic. Crazy, really, looking back.
Yeah.
It's kind of instilled into you. You kind of you kind of bred with that prejudice. And it's a life's work to sort of shake it off, really. So yes, I grew up with with checkpoints and seeing soldiers on the streets, barricades.
The explosions.
Yeah, I don't remember ever hearing any explosions. Yeah, I
Yeah,
don't remember that. But
people were murdered and killed, weren't they? And
yeah, no,
it was scary times.
yeah, I mean every day, really, on the news, there was more tragedy on both sides. You know,
Yeah.
these two tribes at war, and kind of under a guise of religion, but actually, it was a cultural thing, really, more than
Yes,
anything. That
nothing to do with religion, wasn't it? It was politics, really, and
yeah, it
tradition.
was, it was. But yeah, I mean, no family. Were untouched by it really. And my own family, had its fair share of tragedy, really. This is, I think, going out on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, but actually, that was the one day of the year where there was an amnesty. And you knew that there wouldn't be news reports that day of explosions or. People being killed. My brother, my older brother, was in the RUC, the Royal Ulster Constabulary. So he was the equivalent of the local police force. But he was considered a legitimate target, really. So every day he would look under his car. He would touch the Bible before he left. You know, there's all these kind of rituals and things that he observed, but tragically, it didn't it didn't save him. He was one of the many that was killed, it tore our family apart. Really happened in a, you know, really, really sad circumstances, because he'd just seen his second son born, and then they got him in the car park, the hospital car park. So,
oh wow,
it tore us all apart. My mum didn't recover. I would say that some of our family, you know, are still grieving, still yes, traumatized by that. So it touches every life, really. I guess, you know, it's been a life's work for me to forgive.
Yes,
I know some people perhaps wouldn't entertain that, wouldn't think that that was,
of course,
an option. But for me, I mean, I believe that if you don't forgive, you've got two people held captive. You've got that person, and you've got yourself. And so, you know, it wasn't totally selfless to try to forgive. It was about trying to sort of relieve some of the agony in me, really. But it's a life's work, and I, you know, I've talked about this a little bit, you know, in church and stuff. But I think that, you know, for some people, that man who took my brother's life, he was a freedom fighter. You know, to other people, he was a terrorist. And my prayer in life has constantly been, and it's every day, you know, has been to see him as, you know, a child of God, really. We're equally in need of, you know, release. So sorry that that's a bit of a sad story.
That's wonderful. I think it's lovely of you to be so honest and open and to share your journey. I think we all went through, I'm a little bit older than you, and I remember the troubles over here. I remember a bomb going off at St. Albans in the Civic Centre, and I remember us being quite scared in London, commuting on the tube, and everybody having to get off the tube when there was a suspected bomb, and became a daily worry. And cars, you go somewhere and they check under your car to see there was no bomb and things like that. And for us over here, I think it was quite hard for us to understand what was happening. But of course, I guess the English were at the origin of a lot of these troubles anyway, you know, as was. And I really empathise with you and your family, because I had a childhood friend who was a peacekeeper, a French, Antoine. He was a French buddy, same age as me, and he was in the peacekeeping force in Beirut, and he lost his life. And I remember his parents being completely shattered by that. You know, they've never really recovered. Such an awful thing.
Yeah.
So, Alan, you came over to London, which was... How old were you when you came over?
I was 18, 19, I think.
Yes, yeah. You came over to the Chelsea School of Fashion and Art. Was that...
That wasn't Chelsea, actually.
That wasn't Chelsea.
Called St. Martin's. No, called Central St. Martin's, yeah.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, big move for me.
Oh, wow.
Small-time boy, sort of finding myself.
So what year was that, roughly?
That was 87, I think.
Oh, wow.
So
you with all the trendy people in London, all the...
like to think so.
Yeah, I think so. Going to discos and things with the art and design students, and wow, you know.
Well, we like to think we were, you know. We had a great sense of self-importance.
It was nerve-wracking as well. I had a friend who did a show at the end of her college course, and they all put their work on display. I don't know if you did that sort of thing. And all these
potential
employers or people who might buy their artwork and things came along to look, and it was exceptionally nerve-wracking.
I did a fashion course, so we had a fashion show at the end of it.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So that was a big moment. Yeah.
So what were you designing? Were you designing
menswear?
Menswear, yeah. Yeah, we were wondering if it was ladies' wear as well, you see. That,
yeah.
No, we focused mostly on menswear.
Yeah. I'm not sure I was always a great fit, actually, for you know, I think it was quite different to everyone else, you know, this kind of provincial Irishman who was probably 10 years behind the curve, but they obviously saw something in what I was doing.
Oh, that's lovely.
And it was just a great experience. I'm a great believer that nothing's lost, you know. Some people could look back and think, oh, well, gee, that was, you know, 4 years of your life and a lot of money down the drain because you didn't end up doing much with it, but it was, you know, it was such a brilliant life experience.
Real learning curve, isn't it?
Yeah, I learned lots about myself, I tell you.
Make friends with some of the your livelihood friends from your college course? You still in touch with some of them?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I've just got back in touch with a couple of old friends. However many years since we saw each other. Some really significant and fun memories of those days.
Yeah.
Wandering around Soho and it was...
There's some lovely caring people in the creative sort of types tend to be quite caring as well towards each other, don't they? And supportive.
Can be.
Am I stereotyping or generalising a bit? But that's just my experience anyway. I tend to like creative people. I think they're sort of solution focused, and
you're never it's never boring around creators. Yeah. But the fashion business, I mean, that's slightly different, I think, because that's quite cutthroat, actually, I realized that, I think, quite quickly that I was a square peg, really, that I wasn't really prepared to sacrifice everything for the rag trade. And even though I did work a little bit in a kind of sandwich year, I went to New York and I did a bit of tailoring and I did a bit of this and a bit of that.
Wow. But, what a learning experience that must have been.
That was great. That was great, actually. Yeah, some great memories from then. I sort of fairly quickly realised that I probably wasn't going to be my career, really. So I sort of ended up, just to keep the wolf from the door, working in the record department in Harrods. Music's always been a big thing.
That's the sort of thing my brother did, but he did the same for W.H. Smith.
Right.
It's great fun, wasn't it? All those LPs. And...
As a student, my record collection kind of exploded, really. It was back in the days when you got grants and you got housing benefit and everything else. So I think
we should give you a guest spot on on East Coast Radio, you know. You'd be very welcome.
Because
I'm so fond of you already, I'm thinking of having a regular. I think it seems a bit not right just at Christmas time for me, and we should give you a regular slot if you're willing.
Regular slot. Anyway,
I'll come back to that. So I think what the listeners would like to hear, if you could share your journey to God, what happened, because you were on this path, on this conveyor belt to the fashion industry, and then you went into records, which must have been great fun and really interesting to work with something you love, isn't it? So was the path of God the same sort of thing?
Well, I think I didn't really, even though I grew up in Northern Ireland, that's, you know, quite religious. Yeah. Certainly on the surface of things. My family weren't particularly religious. They sent me along to Sunday school because that's what you did. But I have instinctively, almost from as far as I remember, just had this sense that I'm not alone. And I was quite a loner as a kid, quite introvert and a bit of a misfit. And so I guess I had this strong sense that there was a God, whatever that means. And the God kind of was friendly and was quite happy for me to natter on and share all the stuff that was going on. And so I just have had this innate sense of not being alone for as long as I can remember. And so that kind of came with me, and I suppose it sort of found its expression within particular traditions of Christianity back in Northern Ireland. I became really friendly with the group of people that felt the same, and you know, some amazing friendships, experiences, etc. I my career side of things, I suppose, I like you say, I've always loved art, and I got into this college that people said was almost impossible to get into, so I thought, well, I've got to go. Loved my time there, but again, always felt that there was something that I wasn't quite made for that. And so when I realized that the right trade sort of required body and soul, I thought, well, I'm okay to give body and soul to something, but I'm going to give it to something that I really believe in. So I've been going to church in London, and I thought, well, I'll get a little bit of training. I went along to a sort of independent Bible college, which is where I met my wife on the first day.
Oh, how lovely. Alan, that's lovely. That's blessed, isn't it?
Well, it was quite, that's another story. That's for another time.
I guess she's helped you. She's been part of your journey. I think that's wonderful. Lovely.
Big part of that. It was there that I kind of began to explore. I didn't know if I wanted into counselling. I didn't know if I wanted to. I didn't know what I wanted to do actually with it all. I think I began to realise that that the ordained ministry held a whole bunch of the things that I was interested in. And so when we left that Bible college together, got married, moved into a little drafty flat with no washing machine, TV, no nothing, in a sort of church hall, and worked for 5 years in a big housing estate over in Northolt in northwest London.
Oh, tough.
And we were doing a lot of kids' work, which I'd never done before. I didn't think I was particularly good with kids, but it turned out okay. And it was there that I began to explore what a vicar might involve. And it's quite intensive. They put you through the, you know, as you would hope, because as a vicar, you're a source. People put their trust in you, they do rigorously put you through kind of personality stuff and questioning and things.
Moral dilemmas.
All sorts of stuff like that. There,
How to deal with temptation and.
I'm not sure they quite got into all that. I kind of ended up going back to college, did a second degree, and kind of got ordained in St Paul's Cathedral of all places, which was quite a moment. That's a big place.
Very moving. Wow, that must have been wonderful.
It was.
And you went for the Church of England, which is when I grew up, we used to talk about, I don't know if it's still the case, but we used to say, the Church of England is a very broad church. I was wondering, where are you? Are you allowed to say church?
That is exactly why I joined the Church of England, is because it's broad.
Because
there's a place for everyone. And if I know anything about myself, it's that the more I know, the more I discover about what I believe, the less I know that I know. It's, for me, it's been a sort of journey of going from quite rigid beliefs, quite sort of, God, I've gotten boxed. I know exactly what I think of him.
Yeah.
To see, oh no, hold on a second. God is always going to be much bigger. And, you know, all your tiny thinking, all the words that you use, it's never, ever going to capture him. And so that's why I like the Church of England, because there's a home for everyone there. And
I love that. And I remember you saying that last time when we last had a little chat, our non-recorded chat. And I thought that was so nice that everybody's welcome, you know.
Lovely. Well, I suppose that's been, I guess I've sort of been on the receiving end of some quite strict religious.
Yeah.
And I got thrown out of a church once for being for asking too many questions.
Oh.
So I now cherish the questions, and I hope that the congregations that I'm part of, that they're a safe place to ask them. And that's what on lots of our sort of websites and stuff, we say this is a place to have faith and to doubt. There's a big post-it sometimes in the front of the church just says, you know, if you're looking for the perfect church, we're not it. You know, here you'll find people with lots of faith, you'll find people with little, you'll find people who find something, and you'll find people who are still searching.
Yeah.
And if that's okay with you, you're welcome to join us. And our strapline.
The fundamental thing for me is being respectful of others and being considerate and trying to help each other along. I think for me, that's my own personal thing.
Yeah,
comes totally. Before anything else for me. It's being kind to other people, you know.
Yeah.
I just wanted to reflect back, just close on the Northern Ireland thing, that one of the most magical moments was, I mean, when I was growing up, every night we saw Ian Paisley ranting on the television and there were bombs going off from the Provisional RA, and to actually see Martin McGuinness and Ian Paisley become the best of friends and laughing and joking together was wonderful for me. And I was left feeling, oh my God, God works in mysterious worlds. This is lovely. You know, I cherish that. And I miss them both actually now. I mean, I couldn't stand the sight of the both of them as growing up, you know, because but they managed to get there and to work together. And I thought that was magnificent. And they were an awesome team, you know, for the benefit of Northern Ireland. Wasn't that lovely? Anyway, now let's talk about your church. You've been there for 15 years, and we're going to talk about this time last year. We never imagined what was going to happen, did we? So what's your journey been over this last year with the COVID?
Well, it's been one hell of a learning curve, I tell you. It's... I guess when lockdown one kind of hit, it was like a cold shower, really, because it just it completely emptied my diary, and spent a few days just thinking, well, what do I do? Because so much of my life is about presence. It's about being with people and, you know, physically, you know, doing things in churches and everything.
And I guess Christmas time must be a really, really busy time for you. That's both
beautiful, it's
but stressful for you as well.
Stressful and joyful, and have to kind of really kind of pinch myself a lot, because you can just get into the kind of the autopilot, really.
Yeah.
And you're just doing stuff because it's what you do. And
yeah,
a big challenge for me always every Christmas is, well, what am I actually feeling in this? You know, am I experiencing this wonder? Am I experiencing this
special
mind-blowing thing that, you know, that I believe happened and that still changes worlds?
Yeah.
You know, is it changing my world? Because most of the time I'm just, you know, I'm just on a conveyor belt, like you said.
Yeah.
So Christmas. Yeah. So this Christmas will be slightly different. But back in March, we you know, I am so lucky because I have there's lots of things that I'm not good at, and I'm just thank God actually that there are brilliant people around me who are good at lots of those things. And so I was kind of almost slightly cajoled into getting online because I am not this learning curve of Zoom and everything. I never heard of it.
No, but I mean,
pushed me into it.
Yeah.
And we quickly found that doing the Zoom services across the two churches was just actually quite special.
Yeah.
It was a comedy of errors because we got everything wrong. But people were so forgiving. And yeah. And there was that sense of being connected because we were all in shock. We were all isolated.
Yes.
But seeing each other on the screen, being able to wave. And and so, you know, so those services have continued. They've got, I think, better. And we long term, keep going because that's, you know, it's still really special, you know, for some people. If you're in a next door, we've got residential care home. Yeah. Some of our folk live there, and you know they will never get out to church, but they can get on a screen, and that's lovely. So yeah, all the technology stuff. We started doing Thought for the Day every day, just to try and keep people connected with through WhatsApp and email and Facebook. Started using lots of different voices for that. We started asking people all around the congregations to write those. We have got a really strong pastoral kind of team who are ringing around and still do, and taking meals, leaving them on doorsteps.
Oh, wonderful.
Making sure people got to their hospital appointments.
Yeah.
And people really rallied. Yeah, it's like you said, these have been the best of times and the worst of times, because they've got the best in lots of people. And we find that things like, you know, we put on meditation and mindfulness every week now on Zoom.
Mm.
We find that that's really connected with people. People want that centering. They want that sense of kind of, you know, strength, inner strength, just to keep
going. The beginning, pre-lockdown, was awful, wasn't it? All the stampeding in the shops and that kind of me-first behaviour was horrid, wasn't it? It was dreadful. And then suddenly, my observation was people's lives changed completely, and many people really loved that peace and quiet of Sundays past, you know?
Yeah.
Those distant Sundays of the 60s and 70s when nothing happened.
Hearing the birds sing, traffic, there was no traffic.
Yeah, it was so
definitely
time to reflect. And I noticed when I was out and about, because I deliver parcels, I noticed men becoming more involved in childcare and pushing prams. And I'm sure, I think they're enjoying it. And many people found it really tough working from home. But as well, many have enjoyed it, and they've enjoyed that quality time with their families. You know, it's quite special, really, hasn't it? And time to reflect, I think. We've been reflecting on our values a bit during those quiet times, and that actually the world is a bit more vulnerable than we realise, you know. Now, you're a very modest man, because one of your congregations spoke to me and said that you were absolutely fantastic over this last year, and you've done a brilliant job with your technology and things like that. And I know you've been the leader, but and I've looked at your website and I love it. It's what you do as a community, you cater for everybody, is so welcoming. I urge listeners to have a look at the St. Andrew's website, because it's just so friendly. And you've got these Zooms, you've got sermons, you've got bits for children. There was even a beer festival. And the bit that I really like is the beer and carols, because one of my delights growing up was really singing carols full blast to my really enjoying it. And it's one of my loveliest bits in my life was singing carols like that, and I missed that, and I couldn't only imagine having a pint would help me.
Definitely.
And I thought, what a wonderful church. You know, you get a feeling of a very welcoming community, that all comers are welcome. And I think your website is just absolutely wonderful. It's so lovely. It challenges all preconceived ideas about the church, you know, and you know, there's something lovely and sociable and caring, and you know, I think it's wonderful what you've achieved.
Well, that's great to hear. That's what we try to do.
Yeah, well, you're a very modest man, and your congregation feel very strongly about you, you know, Alan. They the ones that I've met, they're very, very appreciative and very proud of you. What you've done over this last year, you know, and
it's not a one man thing.
I know you're team leader, and we kind of said that I asked you cheekily last time, what happens about office politics, and that I myself would find being team leader very hard. I've been a manager, and people were sort of bad mouthing me and undermining me, and I couldn't hack the office politics. And I was wondering if you had the same in the church. within local congregations.
Yeah.
And you said, Alan, what did you say?
I think we're all human. The mistake you make in churches is to think that, you know, that they're slightly more superhuman or slightly kind of more perfect people, but we're not. And the quicker you realize that, the better. But you know, the congregations I'm part of, I there've been so little politics, so little.
That's lovely.
So I'm just grateful, really.
And I think it's a credit to you, Alan, actually. It's a credit to you. Right, we're going to come to your sermon bit where you're going to... You've written something for us, and your thought for the day.
Yeah.
And will you agree to come back quite regularly, so next month or so?
You'll help me?
I'd love to, yeah. We might even let you play the odd record.
Oh, good. Yeah, I'd like that.
That'd be an interesting topic to explore, God through music, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, I've done quite a lot of stuff with God through art, I see. And music always, I've always found music the most very transcendent thing. And not just your church sacredy stuff. I can take or leave that usually.
Yeah.
But you know, people like Johnny Cash and others I have a lot of time for. But
Alan, can I thank you on behalf of the listeners for being such a lovely person to interview, and for being so open and honest and humble and kind and being such a lovely human being. You know, for me, I was wowed when I first met you, and I still am. My preconceived ideas of a vicar have been sort of kicked into touch, and I'm just kind of overcome, really.
Oh.
You know, absolutely wonderful. So anyway.
My privilege, thank you.
Oh no, thank you. And right, are you ready for your
my little bit? Not the Queen's speech, but the Vicar's speech. Here we go.
Lovely. Away you go, Vicar.
Thank you. Well, on a Saturday afternoon at the beginning of November, I find myself at the top of a ladder attaching to the front wall of the vicarage a neon Father Christmas. Astride a ho-ho-ho rocket, no less. Now, given that I'm neither a fan of heights or of Christmas tat, this was my attempt at a, for once, selfless act of love to bring a smile to the faces of my Christmas-crazy wife and son. And as if that wasn't devotion enough, I even ordered two new Christmas tree decorations. One, a plastic 2020 toilet roll.
Ooh.
And the other, Santa in a face mask. Just to remind us of these of this unrepeatable year. But this year, you know, this year amid all the disappointment and uncertainty of a COVID winter, many of us have planned to compensate by making it a Yuletide to remember.
Yes.
Plans have been afoot in many households to go big with the decorations, not least ours, splash out on the food, go that extra mile with the gifts, anything just to inject a little sparkle, a little comfort and joy into otherwise grey days. I can't remember a time when we've all been in such need of a little comfort and joy. These have been particularly uncomfortable times, times when many of our usual sources of comfort and joy have been denied us or are in short supply. We've each, I imagine, felt the absence of that comfort that simply comes from physical contact, from the mere presence of others, from familiar faces, familiar places, familiar routines. And so, perhaps like me, you've sought comfort in other things, like eating or online shopping. I've even surprised myself, because as a dad, I've always seen one of my principal roles as being family light monitor, engaged in that endless crusade to turn off all unnecessary lights around the house. Well, recently, I've been leaving lights on when I leave the house, just to have them there to greet me when I return. When the Bible talks about comfort, it's so much more than just leaving a heavenly light on. It's better than the divine reassurance of God's there. In Hebrew, the word actually translates to strengthen greatly. Christians dare to entertain this crazy belief that on that first Christmas, God himself took human skin and took his place among us. And we choose to believe that he came in the poorest, smallest, most vulnerable way possible. Why? Well, there's a question for a library of books and a thousand conversations. Because I could say, well, he came to show us what God's really like, just how compassionate and inclusive and humane he, she, it is. Or I could say that he came to show us what being fully alive, fully human could be like. But today, on this particular Christmas and in these particular times, what matters to me most is that I believe he came to show us that we're not alone. Ever, that he's with us and for us, and that he understands from personal experience what it's like to be us, to struggle, to live with uncertainty and disappointment and sadness, to cry with us as well as laugh, to remind us that in the end it will be okay, because if it isn't, then it's not the end. He came to bring a comfort and a joy that doesn't expire on Boxing Day, doesn't depend on everything going right or having everything on the wish list. He came to give us his great strength, his comfort, so that we could become the person, the unique person that we were each created to be every day. This Christmas, I know for many of us, is a different one. But my wish, my prayer, is that it will have its own bit of new wonderful. That today will teach us more about what's really important, what love really is. And I would say this because I'm the vicar and I'm paid to, but I pray that it's an opportunity for us all, including me, the professionally religious one, to think again about the Christ in Christmas. So, happy different Christmas from me and the congregations I'm part of. May today be full of unexpected surprises, and may it be full of comfort and joy.
Oh, wow. Oh, lovely, Alan. That was absolutely lovely. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Good. My pleasure, my privilege. Great to
Thank you. I can't remember where the switching off button is.
Yeah, there's they'll come up with two little kind of boxes, one pause and one stop.
Oh yes, yeah.